This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Some people see the future more clearly. In 2012, I interviewed American author and activist Mike Tidwell about his book. The title might as well be today's headlines: The Ravaging Tide, Strange Weather, Future Katrinas, and the Coming Death of America's Coastal Cities. That is surely where we are now, with double hurricanes and the future of coastal Florida in doubt. Mike Tidwell is the founder and director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. They work on global warming impacts and solutions in Maryland and Virginia and Washington, D.C. and beyond. From Washington, Mike Tidwell, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
It's great to be here, Alex.
Mike, what hits you most about Hurricanes Helene and Milton striking Florida and then the Southeast?
I suppose it's just the surreal feeling of a slow-moving nightmare that all the things many of us have been saying are going to happen are actually happening. And in the suffering, people paying with their lives by government and policy community not heeding these warnings that people like me have been putting out there for quite a while, and then the final consequence is people dying by the hundreds across the United States, and now as we speak, another hurricane has ripped across Florida. So it's one of sadness, honestly.
Well, yes, and while all this is happening, there was a massive heat wave across the U.S. Southwest, and more people were dying in the heat there, but there wasn't room in the media to cover it. Have you been in touch with any people who are struggling in the Appalachians after the deadly floods caused by Helene?
Yes. One of the groups that I work closely with on climate issues on the East Coast of the U.S. is a group called Appalachian Voices, and their main office is in Boone, North Carolina. Their office was completely flooded. This was also a group that's raising awareness about climate change, warning of the fact that with these fantastic precipitation events that we're now getting, either from hurricane remnants or just from more moisture in the atmosphere, that narrow valleys and narrow and steep valleys of the sort you see in much of Appalachia, there's just nowhere for the water to go. And so the rivers rise higher, the surrounding infrastructure floods faster, and the leaders of Appalachian Voices, this scrappy climate environmental justice group, you know, had their office devastated.
So ironic and so wrong. I have a friend who lives on higher ground in Asheville, North Carolina. Their river view is displaced by rubble. There is no power, drinking water, or sewage services, and they're not coming back soon because the actual facilities were damaged. Schools and all other services are closed, of course, and the couple had to quickly enroll their two high school kids in a Christian school further north, not their first choice, but that's what was available. So then my friends watched bodies being pulled out of tree tangles and toxic mud. The mud there is toxic from all the products we use getting washed into the waterways there. This is really bad, what happened inland, and so unexpected from a Gulf hurricane, don't you think?
The Appalachian Mountains, you know, we see this kind of flooding in the past. Camille in 1969 brought fantastic flooding to parts of Appalachia and Virginia, and Agnes in 1972, I think it was, also brought this amazing amount of flooding. But what we're seeing now is it's just happening more frequently. We're seeing heavier rainfall. Everything that we've known in terms of weather and climate patterns in the past are now just amplified, and we should not be surprised that that includes these remnant hurricanes killing communities and human beings.
In 2012, Hurricane Sandy struck Washington and your beloved Chesapeake Bay. Do you think people there are more prepared now when the next one comes?
I wish I could say yes. I mean, shoreline property is still very much desired along the 3,000 miles of tidal shoreline of the Chesapeake Bay and the Atlantic coast here. What we are seeing, similar to around the country, is rapidly rising homeowners insurance rates. I think across the country, rates are up as much as 25% on average since 2017. And then, of course, places like Florida, the homeowners insurance is 3.5 times more than the national average. We're seeing that in the Chesapeake region, and it should be, you know, a warning sign to a lot of people. But with the increased amount of population and wealth in the East Coast of the United States, apparently the message isn't getting through. But we're seeing just fantastic changes in the Chesapeake Bay. It's a shallow bay. It averages 20 feet, so it's very sensitive to temperature change. We've seen dramatic rise in surface temperatures of the waters of the Chesapeake Bay. And if, you know, the right hurricane comes from the right angle, you know, with a tight hurricane eye, kind of like Hurricane Wilma. If we were to get a Hurricane Wilma with those kind of high speeds right up the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay, you could see just fantastic destruction as far away as Washington, D.C., and, of course, Baltimore.
Well, you know, after the big hurricanes, the media only covers the human deaths and the destroyed homes and buildings. Humans don't even think about all the natural spaces that might be destroyed or ecosystem damage. Do these big storms damage the natural systems like in Chesapeake Bay?
They do. They leave, Hurricane Isabel in 2003 just completely severed a barrier island, an important barrier island off the coast of Maryland. Where before it was one island, afterwards it was two. We get tremendous damage to underwater grasses and to forests. And this is certainly happening in Florida as we speak. You know, when forests are subjected to such high winds and there's tree mortality and then there's saltwater intrusion, I mean, it can take generations for forests to become healthy again. And so, yes, there's always a long-lasting recovery time when it comes to the larger environment and the ecosystems. And unfortunately, as we all know, these disruptions are now coming in faster and faster cycles.
But I don't necessarily have to go to the disaster zones because I can see climate-driven changes right in my own garden. We've got certain birds and bugs that are gone. The fruit trees are no longer reliable. You're working on a new book about a really local climate vision. Do you want to give us a sneak peek?
In March, I will have a new book. It's called The Lost Trees of Willow Avenue, A Story of Climate and Hope on One American Street. I live right on the border of Washington, D.C. in Maryland. It's an old trolley suburb, 100-year-old home. And we have seen a fantastic loss of our biggest trees in the last 5 years alone. It's just really accelerated. We've lost red and white oaks especially. It's not me saying it's climate change that killing the trees. It's the city arborist and the regional environmental policymakers are counting more and more deceased trees. So the book is about how, you know, we no longer have to travel to the Great Barrier Reef or to the Arctic poles to see climate change. It's now happening, as you mentioned, in your own garden. And what I do in this book, for 1 year in 2023, I keep a record for 12 months of what I've seen are plausible impacts of climate change, and that is Lyme disease is so rampant in my neighborhood. I myself suffer from persistent Lyme disease picked up from a tick in my backyard. The winters don't kill off our ticks the way they used to. The trees are receding and flooding. My church, which is a block from my house, we can't keep water out of our preschool basement. So it's a story about how climate change has reached a point where you could take a dart and throw it at a spinning lacquered globe, and wherever that dart lands now, you can write a whole book about that one little micro dot. And the reason I know that is because I've done it on my one block. And it's meant to be, you know, it's here, let's recognize the changes that are happening out our front door, and let's push even harder for clean energy solutions.
I'm looking forward to reading that. I think that's up my alley. Okay, now your previous book, your 2012 book, The Coming Death of America's Coastal Cities, was part of the title, and part of that is the insurance crisis you just mentioned. It turns out a lot of Florida properties were just not insured, and I don't know where that goes next. Maybe a federal bailout or maybe a lot of homeless people. And it costs a lot more to rebuild after inflation. But after a series of super disasters, you know, from Houston to Tampa, surely some people will realize it is time to retreat from the rising sea. Is that time coming for America, or can we just put it off forever?
No, we can't put it off. I do believe. I was just in Louisiana last year for the first time in a number of years, and I was stunned by how it didn't matter what your economic status was. If you had a small house in the wetland grasses or a fine home in the French Quarter of New Orleans, everybody was being hammered by rising homeowners insurance, and people were negotiating with their insurance companies. Well, if I cut half the benefits, then my insurance rates will only increase 40%. And so people are getting less of their value covered in the insurance, and they're paying exceptionally more for it. And that's just utterly unsustainable, again, for everyone, not just for the poor and middle class, but also for wealthier homeowners. I feel like insurance is that one thing that we can't deny beyond a certain level. I don't know how you have an economy without insured assets. I do believe it's going to reach a point where it's not a matter of fancy homes and only the wealthiest can have homes along waterways. It's when entire communities in places like California and Louisiana and Florida just can't afford to insure their homes. And inevitably, with climate change, those homes are going to be damaged or destroyed, as we've seen in Western North Carolina. We'll see. I think Western North Carolina, where 99% of the homes did not have flood insurance, what does a flood this widespread do for migration and a community's ability to rebuild? Those abilities are finite. And I do think that insurance is going to be that one issue that we can't keep putting off. And again, hopefully will engender greater interest in trying to figure out what's causing these disasters and what can we do to be more resilient, but hopefully reduce the greenhouse gas emissions as quickly as we can so that they don't become even more fierce.
Do you think the hurricanes will eventually push more people into climate activism?
I don't know. I think they're going to push more people into continental interior areas. I think that's inevitable. We saw that with Katrina. There was permanent migration away from South Louisiana. I keep hoping, Alex, that there will be a wake-up call. We've all seen, you know, we thought Katrina was going to be a wake-up call. We thought the heat wave deaths in Europe in 2003 would be a wake-up call. And it just still feels like we're not awake. You know, you had a guest on, the Greek economist who wrote the excellent book, Beyond the Petri Dish, which I just read, where he calls it the Great Silence. You know, we're living in an era of the Great Silence on climate change to our detriment. I don't know. He does argue there that we seem to struggle to hold climate change in our minds long enough to do something about it, but our bodies will certainly move us to action if and when we become food insecure. I hope that that's not what it takes, but I have been surprised, honestly, in 22 years as a climate activist, I've been surprised at how we do make movement every time there's a disaster. We do have more awareness of climate and more political will, but not at the level that one would expect rational communities to have.
Well, that's a harsh note to leave it on. Let me ask you this final question. What is the Chesapeake Climate Action Network up to these days? Actually, when I check out your blog, I see more solutions.
Yes, there are a ton of solutions. We are fighting for clean energy throughout the region of Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. We occupy and surround the nation's capital. I will tell you from my seventh floor office right on the border with D.C., it's very interesting to see how we pass a new solar law in Maryland, and then on the rooftops of the buildings around us, we then start to see more solar on rooftops. We pass a law mandating that new buildings in the District of Columbia be all electric, and then within a year or two, we start to see new apartment buildings with heat pumps on the roofs. So we can actually look out across this region from our high-rise office building and see the results of our policies all around us in physical terms, which is very gratifying. We're winning the battle for clean energy. There's no doubt about that. In my community of Tacoma Park, the first gas station in the world, as far as I know, that converted entirely from gasoline to charging electric cars is right here in my neighborhood. So instead of buying Citgo Gas from Texas, you now get electricity from solar farms across the region put right into your car. So we are making progress, no doubt about that. The great activist Bill McKibben said, you know, winning slowly can be the same thing as losing. So we gotta win faster, and obviously this upcoming election in the United States will have a lot to do with that, and I'm optimistic about that election as well.
From Washington, D.C., our guest is Mike Tidwell. Watch for his new book in the spring of 2025. I'll be keeping my eye out. Find Mike and his passion at ChesapeakeClimate.org, or you can use links in my own show blog at ecoshock.org. Mike, good to hear from you, and thank you.
Thanks, Alex.
This is Radio EcoShock reporting. I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.